Following the military takeover in Sudan on October 25th, led by General Abdel Fattah al-Burhan, and the house arrest of Prime Minister Abdullah Hamdok, it took nearly a month of negotiations to reach a political agreement. The deal was signed on November 21st at the presidential palace between al-Burhan and Hamdok. But there is another significant figure in the country's political dynamics, General Mohamed Hamdan Daglu, commonly called Hemeti. He is General al-Burhan's deputy in the Sovereignty Council. But he is also the leader of what's perhaps the army's strongest division, the Rapid Support Forces.
I am Rasul Serdar in Khartoum. Although General Daglu appears to play a role behind the scenes, many in Sudan and across the region consider him the most powerful figure in the country. But where does his power come from? And as he also mediates between the army and political parties, would he like to become the country's next president? The deputy chairman of the Sovereignty Council of Sudan, Mohamed Hamdan Daglu, talks to Al Jazeera.
General Mohamed Hamdan Daglu, thank you for talking to Al Jazeera.
You are welcome, and we are pleased to have you here.
General, what was happening behind the scenes on October 25th? How did the military takeover happen, and how did you make the decision for the power grab?
What happened on October 25th was the ultimate outcome of a long process since the change started in Sudan. During such process, many discussions were made and many initiatives proposed by various parties. The Prime Minister himself proposed two initiatives. During our meetings in the Transitional Partners Council or the Sovereignty Council with the Cabinet of Ministers, we made maximum efforts, but we couldn't reach a breakthrough. At that point, we were left with three options, the best of which was the move we had taken. Such a move was completely agreeable to the Prime Minister. We did not make such a move on our own. The Prime Minister was in agreement with us as to the decision we had adopted. However, for him, the decision should have been endorsed by the Freedom and Change Coalition. As I said, we were left with three scenarios. Freedom and Change Coalition endorsing the dissolution of the government, which was next to impossible. And the second scenario was the move we had taken. And the third was the collapse of our country. We adopted the best option available. We made the right decision from our perspective at that time, and we prevented the collapse.
So, General, you have been very open about your views on political parties in the transitional government, and several times you have demanded the Prime Minister Abdullah Hamdok to dissolve the government. Doesn't it seem that it was already set up? And please, can you specify your own role in this military takeover?
We had several meetings with all the political parties. We extended all advice possible from the beginning till the end. We did not spare any efforts. Regretfully, it was their fault. Some Sudanese are putting the blame on us. On the contrary, we are not to blame. We believe we had taken the right move. During the past 30 years, the country was under the grip of a single-party regime. What we saw is that our country was taken by another grip. I said it in public. We were left again to a single-grip rule. The move we had taken has put an end to this. The change was great. It was started by all the Sudanese people, especially the youth, who represent more than 60% of our population. Regretfully, such change was hijacked by a single party who was part of the deal we had signed with other parties too. Such party gripped all the powers in its hand and sidelines all other parties. It was even worse than the former single-party regime. According to the deal we signed, the Prime Minister is helpless. He had a mediatory role, and the parties were to respond. Despite the advice we offered, The four major parties manipulated all powers. The prime minister and other small parties were in agreement with us. Even before signing the deal, we wished to reach an arrangement on the governors of provinces. They pushed us to sign the deal earlier without finalizing this issue. After the signing, they backed down, and the issue of governors are still pending for more than a year. Are we blamed simply because we are the ones in the uniform? Sudan is the country of all the Sudanese, not only ours.
So did you decide to conduct a military takeover based on that the prime minister was not able to control his own government?
It is not the issue of prime minister losing control. According to the deal, the Freedom and Change Coalition was brought on board. So his hands are tied. He cannot make a decision of his own accord without the Freedom and Change Coalition endorsing such a decision. The prime minister had no leeway, and that was the problem. Freedom and Change Coalition were against all the agreements made, from liberating the exchange rate to lifting the subsidy. The prime minister should be vocal on this issue. He should admit which side was supporting him over the past 2 years. It was us.
You repeatedly say that you are committed to the goals of the revolution, yet your forces are accused of participating in the killings of the protesters in front of the military headquarters in 2019. Have they been held accountable for what they have done?
This is a good question. All I can say is there is a probe committee active on this issue, working on the investigations. Till date, the findings are not established yet. I cannot comment on the proceedings of an independent committee, and we hope the results are out soon.
Considering the fact that you are so powerful in this country, do you believe that the committee could be fully independent?
It is an independent committee, totally independent.
So, General, your forces have also been accused of arresting politicians, detaining activists, and also oppressing protesters on the streets over the past month. Have your forces been involved in any killings of the civilians through the protests that took place last month?
Listen, there is an organized campaign targeting the Rapid Support Forces. It aims at demonizing these forces. We cannot establish those behind this malicious campaign, but according to the law, the Rapid Support Forces are to support the regular authorities. They have no power to arrest or use force against protesters. The Rapid Support Forces are deployed at various parts within the capital. They also have several camps within and around the capital city.
So, General Daglo, just weeks before the military takeover, some tribes in East Sudan, they have blocked the ways and barricaded the roads to Khartoum. So East Sudan, Port Sudan, were completely cut off from the capital. Why didn't you interfere? Why didn't you stop them in doing so? Because many say that you deliberately let them to do in order to pave the way for the military takeover.
This is part of the malicious campaign. First, the issue of the east of Sudan is not new. Since the signing of the Juba Agreement for Peace, the east was in total rejection of the agreement. Secondly, we have worked hard on this issue, held several meetings, more than 50 meetings with the concerned parties. I personally managed to bring them closer to a deal. I even tried with a special committee led by General Shamsuddin Kabashi, assisted by other ministers and advisors, to engage with them in dialogue. Such dialogue should be aired to the public for them to lay out their demands with the aim of reaching an agreement. It was followed by a meeting with the Supreme Council for Peace, but we reached a deadlock. After that, the province was cut off. It was an unprecedented move, which was initiated by the Freedom and Change Coalition, not the people of the East. They blocked the roads, the railway lines, and Darfur was sealed off for 4 months. Even when the oil facilities were brought to a halt, we did our best to reach an amicable solution through dialogue. We cannot be part of this problem.
So, General, tell us about what happened in the days that led up to November 21st, the day that the agreement has been signed between the Prime Minister Abdullah Hamdok and General Al-Burhan. So were you involved in the negotiations?
Since October 25th, we have covered a long distance. Along the road, many initiatives were proposed by various parties within Sudan and without. But we reiterate that we are committed to the course and the goals of the revolution. We do not wish to see it straying off course. As I said, we should not rid the country from a single-party rule and bring a similar one. Dr. Abdullah Hamdok's role is to ensure the revolution will remain on course. Many claim that Hamdok refused the office from the beginning, but this is not true. We had hoped to have him as the 15th member of the Sovereignty Council, but we saw it was necessary to have Hamdok as the prime minister to avoid any sanctions from the international community. General Al-Burhan and his team exerted huge efforts, especially at the last 3 days before the recent agreement was made. We are part and parcel of this agreement, of course, and this agreement will ensure Sudan is back on the right course again.
General, you negotiated an agreement with Prime Minister Abdullah Hamdok, who was under house arrest. Why should Sudanese people accept it if it looks to be a forced agreement?
From the moment the correction move was taken, Hamdok was kept in his own residence, not a house arrest. He kept his own guards. On the day we were supposed to meet him, the wives of ministers who had been arrested stormed the area. That's why Hamdok was moved to the protocol's palace for his own safety. After that, he returned to his residence. The following days were normal, but with cautious movements. He was being visited by delegates and other politicians. We were in contact with him, too. I personally visited him together with General Al-Burhan. Even official delegations were able to meet him. If he were put to a house arrest, he wouldn't have been able to receive these delegates or make calls with foreign officials, like the United States Secretary of State. We had his safety in mind amid that volatile situation where any act of violence was not ruled out.
General, we see your footprints everywhere in this country, as a mediator between armed groups, between the tribes, political parties, even the border disputes. And you have the powerful rapid support forces, which many say that it has never lost a battle. You're coming from a very humble background. So can you tell us, how did you build such a powerful empire?
As to the first part of the question, we thank God for guiding our steps to the right move. Secondly, I thank all parties involved, especially that I appeal to them all. I thank them for accepting my mediation role. The credit does not go to me alone. I am assisted by some others. We once fought against each other, but we later came to realize that we should join hands to build our country. That's why we agreed we should reach a compromise. We can build our country by actions, not by hopes. In addition to the Juba Agreement for Peace, we managed to reach the South Sudan. During the talks with armed groups, we managed to bring all views together, President Salva Kiir and opposition leader Riek Machar. As to the rapid support forces, as you know, all battles involve victory and defeat. I cannot see us as victorious. We fought against our fellow Sudanese, and all parties are losers. We hope we learn from the past and turn such loss into positive efforts towards building our country. We should all abandon racial, tribal, and provincial divisions.
General, do you believe that you have ever killed innocent people, or do you feel any regret for that killings? that you had to do?
All the battles we fought were against armed rebels. I know those rebels are my fellow Sudanese. No side is victorious. Loss is suffered by all. No doubt I feel deep regret, especially when you look at the number of the fallen, the widows, and the orphans. We could have all avoided these bitter consequences. We shouldn't have engaged in fighting in the first place. Every drop of blood should be spared, and we should join hands to build our country. However, I can say, I fought against armed rebels, not unarmed innocent civilians.
So, General, you have participated in the war in Yemen and sent the troops to fight on the side of Saudi-led coalition. Why did you accept to do that? And are your troops still in Yemen? If so, why?
It was not my personal decision. It was the state's. It was made under the coalition to restore legitimacy in Yemen. It was also made under the former regime. And after toppling the regime, we were supposed to honor all the past agreements, domestic and international. These forces were not dispatched under my orders. They were sent under international agreements made with the state.
Considering the fact that you are one of the most powerful men in this country, I'm sure if you didn't find sending the troops to Yemen moral, you wouldn't do that, so, right?
Might is to God. I do not see myself as a mighty, influential man. I am a simple man, a Sudanese citizen in the first place. It is true, I am the vice president of the Sovereignty Council, but I am a simple Sudanese man. Secondly, that decision was made under a regional agreement involving all the Arab countries, not Sudan alone. Almost all the Arab countries were part of it. Above all, our forces are not fighting inside Yemen now. They are inside the Saudi Arabian borders, fighting in defense of the two holy mosques.
General, some say that your troops' salary is not being paid by the state. So how do you pay the salaries then, and where do you make that money from?
This is also part of the malicious campaign aiming at demonizing the rapid support forces. How can I afford to pay those soldiers? These forces are part of the armed forces. Those soldiers, like any other regular force, are paid by the finance ministry. And you can verify this with the finance minister or his undersecretary.
So do you confirm that your troops are not being financed by your own resources?
You could say I have my own sources of income. I have my own trade business. I hail from a pedigree of merchants. I, like any other businessman, can lend a helping hand to the armed forces or the police as a token of appreciation. The rapid support forces are regular forces with their own duties, restrictions, rights, and obligations, not my personal militias. I cannot afford it.
But some people say that you didn't only build a military empire, but also a business empire by using that powerful rapid support forces in the country. So would you agree with that?
This is not true. We have a long history in trade. I personally started my own business in 1990. We were among the first to discover gold in Sudan. We used metal detectors and ventured out in the desert, searching for the gold. In Jabal Amr, for example, we, like any other Sudanese citizen, applied with the mining ministry for a license. We paid the relevant fees and satisfied all the formalities. After that, we set up a plant, which was running for a while. That's why people have moved heaven and earth, claiming we seized tons of gold. And then we handed over the plant to the government with the 11 kilograms of gold in our possession at that time. In addition, there are thousands of foreign plants operating in the area, producing hundreds of kilos of gold every month.
General, your forces also have been accused by the rights groups and the war survivors in Darfur of killings, rapings, and burning the village. So What makes them qualify to be part of the security makeup in Sudan?
The war in Darfur and attacks on the villages was in 2003, while the Rapid Support Forces were formed in 2013. This is a living proof that we are targeted with a malicious propaganda. On the contrary, we were part of the solution in Darfur as we helped the displaced return home. Our forces are deployed across Darfur to maintain security. I advise you to pay a field trip and see for yourselves. You will see all the regular forces fulfilling their duties there, the armed forces, the police, and the rapid support forces. Go to Darfur and see for yourselves who is guarding the people and who is protecting their seasonal harvest.
So, General, why aren't your forces part of the army yet? They have their own uniforms, their own cars, their own bases, even their own commander-in-chief. But the head of the army says that you are one unit. So how is that?
All the armies in the world have their own uniform. According to the law, we are part of the regular army. We are reporting to the chief commander of the armed forces. It is true. We answer to the chief commander of the armed forces. Adding to that, each branch of the armed forces have their own unique uniform. The special forces, the infantry, the naval and air forces. And this is a norm in all armies worldwide.
But in reality, people say that your forces do not get the orders from the head of the army, but from you.
This is not true. I am the commander of the Rapid Support Forces. I receive orders from the chief commander of the armed forces, and in turn, I relay these orders to the Rapid Support Forces. And all is documented through official correspondence.
So, General, are you ready to integrate your forces into the army as part of the security sector reform? And if so, how will that happen? And most importantly, when?
Reform is an ongoing process, and we are part of the army. But these rumors are circulated by people with agendas. The latest political agreement spoke about one unified national army, and reform will entail all the branches, the army and the rapid support forces, the police and security forces. We are marching ahead with reforms. In addition, the rapid support forces are not a unique phenomenon in Sudan. Many other countries have similar forces.
So, General, the Prime Minister was very much clear when I had an interview with him regarding the security sector reform. If they insist on your forces to be fully integrated into the army based on a certain timeline, would you agree with that, or would you go against the decision of the Prime Minister and the government?
The Prime Minister is not concerned with reform to the security apparatus. He is responsible for certain duties under the transitional period. We are now concerned with the major four tasks: the economy, which means the livelihood of our people, security, peace, and elections. We are all running the state affair in consultative manner, not top-to-bottom orders. In addition, speaking about security arrangements comes before the regular forces. This is the priority.
General, there are reports of hundreds of people being killed and injured, several villages being burned in West Darfur. So what happened there? And were your forces also involved in such acts?
To begin with, the figure of hundreds is not true. Lives were lost on both sides, military men and civilians. At the end of the day, they are all human beings. However, a maximum of 14 or 15 persons were killed on both sides. This happened because some did not honor the written undertakings of non-aggression. The rapid support forces are linchpin to security. They are guarding the country and the countrymen. They are not part of any conflict. If some are accusing the Rapid Support Forces of any violations, let them prove it.
Are you going to run for president at the end of the transitional period in the elections of
2023?
Our top priority now is to take our country to a safe shore, to see a true transition to democracy, not empty slogans, and to lead our people to free and transparent elections. We do not have any personal interests. We wish to brave through to safety, especially we are surrounded by many troubled countries, from Libya to Ethiopia. Our key concern is to cruise to safety.
General Mohammed Hamdan Daglu, thank you for talking to Al Jazeera.
Thank you very much.